You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 168. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll discuss some meatballs, some things that happened in Cleveland baseball over the last week, talk about Franmil Rice and Jose Ramirez breaking COVID-19 protocols and being sent home for at least a couple days, have some over-unders for Josh Naylor, Aaron Civale, and others, and of course, we asked everybody a poll question on Twitter about who's most likely to be traded. We'll kind of discuss that question there and what it means, depending on who you voted, about how you probably feel about the team. That kind of started a whole interesting thought bubble, I think. But get to all that and more with none of the Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm very well, Matt. How are you? It's good to be here, as ever.
I'm doing good. We had more baseball to watch. We actually got, I don't think we watched any in the last episode.
No.
But I've had a couple games. There's spring training makes no sense as far as what is broadcast where, I've learned.
Correct.
I've started YouTube TV, which I mentioned last week, which is cool, but also they don't seem to know what is actually being broadcast and what isn't. No team seems to know correctly. I didn't think the Cleveland would be broadcast at all until like the 10th. As long as you can watch them somewhere else, you could have watched them play the Cubs. They had another game that was broadcast. YouTube TV said the Oakland game was going to be broadcast, but it wasn't. So it's not consistent, but it's there.
It does seem like this multi-billion-dollar-a-year organization known as Major League Baseball sure is run like, I don't know.
Are you suggesting Major League Baseball might not be the smoothest operation, Merritt? Is that what you're
saying? It's run by two brothers out of their garage somewhere in Omaha or something like that. I love it.
They're just a little startup, Merritt. Give it time. They're running a Kickstarter.
They'll figure it out. You know, the thing about, see, I kind of work for a startup company. And the key here, Matt, is it's not really to deliver now. It's about bringing money in now and growing to a certain point of like a critical mass, I suppose, so you can be successful later. And I think that's what they're shooting for. So I get it.
But and also, on the other hand, I also don't care about spring training. So even if they were together and they were in the second stage of their Kickstarter where they knew what they were doing in spring training, it's hard to care. I would have simulated way far ahead and then would be the show by now. I would have hit that button and gone. This is not an exciting time of year. I've tried to watch other games too. Like the first couple innings, there's at least something going on. I do like the new rules where you can just sort of do whatever. Like after 20
game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they'll legitimately just stick around. I get eventually though prospects in the coming year, so it wouldn't be as necessary, but I like that you can just flip the game when there's 20 pitches, that you can just call a game after if you only need 8 innings. I think there's no sense in dragging out spring training.
I mean, yeah, the entire point of this is to just get guys kind of reps and get back in the swing of things. It's not about nothing matters anywhere. And so
right. I mean, there's several ties so far. So,
yeah. Like, it's like, well, we're done now. It's not a weather thing. Cause it's, you know, 78 degrees and sunny every single day in Goodyear, Arizona. So,
and there was at least one argument about whether or not to end the game. So that was fun. You know what never ends, Merritt? Meatballs, Merritt. They never end. Yeah. What's your meatball this week? What's your big juicy detail that we've had?
It's more of a vague observation about what I hate spring training baseball. Because I've learned one of two things from this little kind of nugget of statistical evidence I've pulled up over the last couple of days. I just kind of, one of the things that I like to pay attention to when I'm watching, and then specifically, you know, it's a growth thing, I think, is a plate discipline and patience and things of that nature, because you want guys swinging at balls that they can hit. Well, you know, we want guys like Bobby Bradley teeing off on pitches they can hit, not just, you know, whiffing horribly on a slider in the dirt, just as an example. Now, either this is a blip of the stats or Bobby Bradley just sucks. But first of all, it's null for this year as far as pitches per plate appearance. But he, for his spring training career, he's at 1.753 pitches per plate appearance compared to in the regular season, albeit very, you know, it's not very many seasons. He's at 3.898. And I went through a couple other players like Jake Bowers. He's at first MLB spring training career, 1.898 pitches per plate appearance versus 4.139. And it goes on down like that. You know, even like, what's his name? Like Cesar Hernandez, known for taking a lot of pitches. He's at like, you know, 2.1. So either these guys just want to get up there, swing the bat and leave, or these goddamn stupid statistics are all wonky and dumb, and I can't glean any one meaningful thing from them. So on top of the games being, you know, pseudo Little League in their setup, because, you know, like they just kind of play until they're tired of playing or whatever, or they're just not actually playing the game the way they normally would. So either way, I'm just over it, I guess, is how I would describe it. So that's my meatball. I'm over spring training already.
Yeah, I feel that. So yeah, mine is last year, I don't think, I believe the Indians were the only team to not throw a pitch over 100 miles per hour, which for a team that struck out as many batters as they did and as good of a pitching staff as they had, that's kind of incredible. But already in spring training this year, Manuel Class A, he did it three times, or he did it at least once against the Cubs on March 5th. That's a game that was televised. That cutter is just ridiculous. Every pitch just moves, even if it's going 100. We can't see the speeds live, but obviously the reporters there can, and they mentioned what it is. And that cutter, like every single pitch is moving, whether it's going 100 or 97. So that was ridiculous. He did three more today. He had a 1-2-3 inning, hit him 100 miles per hour twice. Anthony Gosse, I think he hit 100 mile per hour. And then Sam Hentges, he didn't hit 100 yet, but he is a guy that's capable of doing it. He's done it before. I think he's got up like 96 in I don't think he's pitched in spring training, but doing just pitching on the backfield, he's gotten up pretty high. So he'll probably get there too. So, but yeah, there's just so many relievers. Like Anthony Gosse probably won't make it, and Sam Hentges probably won't either right away, but they're going to at least hit. Somebody's going to get 100 miles per hour. It's probably going to be Emmanuel Class A multiple times just immediately. So that'll be cool. It's just fun watching. I wish we had a radar gun to light up and look at it new and on over, but we don't. But just knowing that it happened and just seeing him pitch has been really fun, because obviously we haven't seen him since he was traded for Corey Kluber, which if this is 100 mile per hour cutter, that is incredible for Cleveland. And him and James Karinchak, the back of the bullpen, it's going to be one hell of a 1-2 punch. I don't know how much of the closer role is going to be determined by spring training performance, but if Terry Francona is just going with my best pitcher is my closer, which might not be the best thing necessarily, but if that's what he's doing, then it's hard to not see it as Class A right now, unless there's something that points to maybe the steroids helped him or whatever. But if he's already hitting 100 now and he's not on anything and he seems to be recovered well, I don't know how he's not the best reliever they have right now. I mean, Karinchak obviously has his own potential, but he is volatile as all hell, so who knows if he's going to walk three batters and strike out three or just walk a bunch and give up a home run. But as far as a consistent guy who can hit high numbers, has some great pitches, I'm really excited about Class A and watching him pitch so far in spring training.
Yeah, it's amazing too, because it's movement that's not just typical cutter of just horizontal, like, you know, running away from the arm side. It's a lot of depth to it too, which is very fun. It's also interesting that this exists now, and like even last year, like, man, James Karinchak throws so hard. This is awesome. But no, actually, wrong. This is hard, bitch. Yes.
Well, I mean, obviously, Class A doesn't have the curveball that Karinchak does, but it's last year, Karinchak's velocity looked incredible, and that's like, what, 96, 97? To Class A, that's nothing.
Matt, Mariano Rivera survived in the majors with a cutter, and that's all they threw. So, ergo, Class A is literally more of a Mariano Rivera. That's what I'm saying to you right now.
That's a guaranteed Hall of Fame. No Class A, I believe what we're saying. But yeah, those are our meatballs this week. It's fun. We have to get to watch games and have stuff to talk about. But
And be mad at stats that are useless. So, you know, it's great. Spring training,
what else,
baby,
is meatballs other than be mad at stats? but yeah, this last week, obviously, there was something not great that happened. Franmil Reyes and Jose Ramirez, after Friday's game, they drove to the Friday's game in Mesa, Arizona. And then they went out. Jose Reyes got a haircut, and then Ramirez, Franmil, and Cubs pitcher Pedro Staup went out to just have a little dinner inside of a restaurant without masks, and they took pictures, and Franmil Reyes posted a video of it on Instagram and tagged Pedro Staup. So just bad decisions all around were made. Pedro is also nobody's like suspended, they're just away from the team. I believe they saw that Franmil Reyes and Jose Ramirez couldn't come back as early as this afternoon. They'll probably be back by tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon. As long as all their tests are negative, they'll be fine to be back. But just not good judgment. I mean, this isn't like end of the world stuff, but that's still a really stupid, pretty selfish thing to do, to go out in a pandemic, even if it's not to the same level of what Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger did last year, where they snuck out in the middle of the night, came back and lied about it, and then got on a plane with their teammate who survived cancer and was extremely high-risk individual. So it's not that level. I get that people aren't reacting the same, and I don't think they should be, but it's also just obviously a very dumb thing. The fact they took a video of it and tagged somebody in it. They did come back and they self-reported it. That's also another, I think, small plus in their side. I wouldn't be surprised if they self-reported it because somebody saw him post that and said, oh, by the way, Franmil, this is not good. You should probably mention that you did this. So there wasn't hiding it. They weren't trying to hide it, I guess. Unless he just subconsciously takes Instagram videos and posts them. Maybe they were, but it's not great. Not a great look, especially considering Framel did it last year for 4th of July. He was out. And again, I believe he posted a picture of himself on 4th of July without a mask. So he is not great at maintaining this, which...
You know, it's funny. The haircut thing happened to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid of the 76ers, too. They got to miss a similarly pointless activity within their own life in the All-Star game. So it's kind of funny. They're just like, I was exposed. I don't know. So let's get a day or two off. It's funny.
It's essentially what it was. They got to go get a haircut, get a nice dinner inside, and then just came back and said, oh, by the way, I was exposed. Can I be gone for a couple days? Yeah, because you couldn't just say you want a couple days off and then go out to eat. So they kind of did both. But I mean, yeah, like it's not as bad as what Please Zach and Clevenger did. It's still bad just because
it seems more boneheaded than anything else, honestly.
At the very, very least, it was stupid to violate MLB's rules, because they are rules, whether it's too strict or not, that they can't be indoors, they can't be around groups of 10 people, they can't do all this stuff. But whether you think it's bad or not, the fact is they broke the rule and they were just gone for a couple of days. So it didn't seem like even Terry Francona was too upset about it. He just basically said it's up to MLB to decide when they come back now, and they're enforcing their rules. He said they weren't looking out to like hang anybody out to dry just because they broke the protocols. But still stupid either way, even if it does seem like it's winding down the places we are, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, which is kind of an important thing. But
I'm almost a little, I don't think I'm upset. It's just kind of funny that they're like, yeah, I'm more upset with, you know, we're not going to do anything about it, but it probably should. It's almost like the league's own rules are pointless nothingness in that case, if you think about it that way. So,
yeah, because I mean, they're not penalized. Like,
no, nothing, literally nothing happened. Like, again, they got a day off and they just got to go and hang out and, you know, post something on Twitter saying, sorry, guys. And that's, you know, we're not going to see or hear anything else from it. So, again, I mean, if they're just literally trying to get a day off, great flex. I can't be mad at them. It's stupid. I can be mad at them, actually. But
yeah. And although on Sunday, we don't know for sure if they would have started or not, but Yu Chang started at third base. And since he's taking over Jose Ramirez's spot, so maybe he just lost it there.
Yo, what if he just took Jose Ramirez's spot just now by hitting dingers forever?
I've never seen Jose Ramirez hit home runs to every field in the span of three games.
I have. Has. I'm pretty sure
he probably has, but yeah. I don't recall it this exact second. So
exactly, yeah.
I'm going to pretend it never happened. But yeah, it happened. It's not it's probably over by the time this podcast comes out. It's just something kind of to mention that wasn't a great look for either of them that they did it and broke it. I mean,
well, you know, it's funny too, because Cleveland in general just having such a great week as far as PR and stuff. Oh yeah, concerned.
Great so, offseason. Just season. All around they're doing
just
so
in
good.
General. I mean, it's funny when you open up Twitter and it says, yeah, it looks like the Mets extension of Francisco Lindor is going to be moving swiftly and easily. I'm like, boy, all right, where's that hemlock? This is great. All right. Just let's keep it rolling, boys. This is fantastic. But yeah, it's great, great week.
Something terrible next. Yeah. We'll just
what's next, you think, Matt? What's the next stupid bullshit we have to think about because we're a fan of this team?
The only next immediate thing I could think of is to like come out and say the name is not going to be changed, or they're just going to do, they've gone back and they want to be Tribe or just be the Cleveland baseball team. Just a terrible decision about the name.
I was thinking maybe on field wise, like Jimenez or Chang will just continue to utterly obliterate the baseball, and then they'll send them both back down. We'll be like, what the fuck? Just for no good reason at all. Well, Rosario is just hitting 100. With somehow negative on base percentage or something like that.
And I did see that Terry Pluto thinks that Jimenez could be the starting shortstop, so maybe that won't happen. That's kind of the hope that... Because, I mean, he has hit well, and I think he's better than Rosario. I want him to be the starting shortstop.
Oh, 100%. I mean, there comes a point, you know, I mean, obviously I understand manipulating service time, but, like, Jimenez isn't that young at this point. Like, you're just kind of being very nakedly awful about things. What you're saying, what is he, 24 or something like that?
Well, he's 22, so he's a little bit younger than I think.
Never mind, I take it all back. He's way too young. Get back here. Get out of here, kid. Come back to me when you can grow a mustache. Oh, you can? You know, it's a euphemism. Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, he's 22 and he skipped AAA. So if his is almost... I still think there's no reason he shouldn't be the opening day starter, but they have more cover for it if they do. I mean, because he played last year, he was fine. There's opposing pitchers didn't get a chance to adjust to him, so I'm sure he wouldn't have hit that well all year. But
they got to say he's young
and they haven't played AAA. Yeah, he's better than Rosario. He's the best they have, which is, if they're saying they're a winning team, just get the best up you have now.
Second best after Yu Chang, obviously.
Well, obviously. The best.
Yu Chang can play anywhere, to be clear. I was reading an article today, just not to change the subject too much, I was reading an article about the battle between Bradley and Bowers, and I was like, Man was like, but what about Chang?
Yu Chang, first baseman.
It could happen. More athleticism, right? You know, as I learned from the movie Moneyball, it's very easy to play first base. So just do it, is all I'm saying. Just please do that instead. That'd be funny.
I do think that, I mean, Chang's got to play somewhere, right? If he's not the super utility guy, I don't know where he goes, because unless he is the starting shortstop and Andrés Giménez, they still manipulated service time by starting him in AAA and starting Yu Chang at shortstop. And like Rosario as a utility guy or in the outfield or something. But I don't know how much Yu Chang's spring's performance has impacted how much they actually think of him. But.
Yeah, like that's the question. Like how much – I don't have any evidence or information on this right now. Just something I've thought about like kind of absently lately. Like how much would a player have to – like a fringe kind of whatever. You know, like, I mean, he's barely a top 10 or 15 prospect in the organization probably. And that's just, you know, whatever. But – how much would he have to hit in order to force the hand of the team, right? Like, if he hits 600 the rest of spring training and was just blasting the ball everywhere, like, what change would that force on them? Like, would they just trade Cesar Hernandez? Would they put him in the outfield? I mean, I'd be okay with that. But, like, off the top of your head, can you think of other times when that's been – where the hand of a team has been forced because a guy just mashed. I mean, obviously, Joe Charbonneau was a guy whose name comes up. That was in like 1983 when it comes to Cleveland. So I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. But anyone come to your mind when you think of someone trying to do that or doing that?
I can't imagine how good you'd have to be in spring. I mean, obviously, there's a line. Like, if you start from the opposite end and say they homer at every single at bat, you're going to start them. But I think you got to work your way back from that. I'm not sure what the line would be. It'd have to be crazy. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. You either just, you're just working on things in spring training and most of the stuff is set and maybe like a fringe guy is being shifted to another fringe role. But I don't think you start anybody based on how much they're crushing in spring training. But if you do, I mean, Gabriel Arias right now, 7 plate appearances, 6 hits. At what point is that not playing service time merit if they don't start Gabriel Arias?
I would say, I think with a pitcher, it's easier to pitch your way onto a team because you can suddenly show up and show something like Adam Ottavino showing that he's no longer a fringe reliever because he spent all, you know, winter developing, you know, kill pitches and stuff like that. But
I would actually bet that happens quite a bit with pitchers, especially bullpen arms where anybody can go anywhere. Like if a reliever comes in, like if Anthony Gose suddenly had a bunch of control and was throwing 100 miles per hour, I think he pitches his way onto the team easily, but he doesn't have the control yet. But if that suddenly grows, I think you can ride that, especially because bullpen isn't like a big, it's not the same as like replacing your starting shortstop if he hits well. Like if your eighth or ninth reliever is incredible and throws really hard, you can just take a chance on him because he has a good spring, I think. All right, so what do you say we talk about some under-overs for the upcoming season? We're coming toward the end now. We're coming to a couple interesting players, I think. Our first one is somebody we talked about, especially last week because he's sticking in right field, is Josh Naylor. Zips puts him at 520 plate appearances, 15 home runs, 4 stolen bases, 8.1 walk rate, 15.4 strikeout rate, 99 WRC plus, 0.7 war. This is one that Matt Schlichting took. He took the over. He kind of had an interesting, I don't know how much to actually read into this, but it was an interesting way to look at it, that Josh Naylor, every time he plays, like when he gets his first round of roughly decent playing time at each level, he's a pretty bad hitter, like in single A and a higher A in 2016, he was really bad the first time around. He was 62 WRC plus. The following year, when he was in that same level again, he had 119 WRC plus. Double A in 2017, he had an 88 WRC plus. The following year, also at Double A, he had 128 WRC plus. So, I mean, Major League Baseball, when he was between 2019 and 2020, he was a below average hitter at 84 WRC plus. So what does he do when he gets another large batch of plate appearances where he gets to adjust to everything and maybe see the same quality of pitchers and get better against them? Maybe he is suddenly an amazing hitter. I don't know if he could be just basically following that same pattern. He got what Matt brought up was a hitter that's 272, 360, 472, 20 home runs, a 2.5 or almost 3 war, 2.9. It's not a perfect thing, I don't think, but if that's what he is, I'm okay with him turning into that. Matt basically said it's Mike Napoli, which is pretty accurate. Like,
yeah. Napoli never hit 272, 360.
272, 360. Yeah. Like, if that's what he is, then because he's a guy, like, if you look at his minor league numbers too, he doesn't strike out a ton.
The thing that more surprised me with these projections was the walk rate, quite honestly, being at 8.1%. Just because my own specific exposure to him has been him not walking, because I didn't watch him in San Diego, obviously. But again, he had a 9% walk rate there, and that was in twice as many games more than twice as many games than he spent than he had in all 2020. And obviously he was also not in the midst of a while you were talking, I reached over and grabbed my perspectives annual as well to see where they put him. And I mean, yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, it's, if he's a 23 home run guy, like, I would take the over on this 100%. I think he'll hit, he has too much power. I think they'll hit only 15. He's going to play. He's going to get 500 plate appearances. And if he's walking that much, I don't know. I think he's going to be more effective than they're getting credit for, which that would bump him. I don't know if it'd be as high as Matt's, subtle math puts him, but like a 110 WRC plus, or like 275, 340, 460, something like that, right? So like a WOBA in the 340, 350s range, something like that. Just because if the walks hold, I think there'll be more power and same number of strikeouts. So that makes a lot of sense to me, I think. Yeah, but I think the over, 100%, definitely. I think we'll be better than this. Like you said, he's always gotten better when he spends more time there. And I know we were talking about it. It was mentioned on our Slack channel this afternoon, but like, it just feels like last year didn't happen almost, right? Like I'm kind of throwing out most of what I saw from last year as far as like conclusions drawn on players, because it's just so little of anything. And honestly, dude, if you end up with Mike Napoli out of a 23-year-old, like that's really good, because Mike Napoli was that good when he was like older than that, like 32 or something like that, right? I'm just pulling Napoli's numbers from when he was on the team. Well, he just kind of fell off a cliff there towards the end. There, that was ugly.
I mean, when he was with Cleveland, this is almost exactly what I mean. He would strike out less and walk less compared to the projections from
in 2009 when Mike Napoli was on the Angels between the ages of 25 and 28. He hit 256, 343, 492, an average 19 home runs a year. I mean, yeah, that's basically what I think Naylor could do. And also he was catching, so you got to think. Yes, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Matt took the over. I think both of us are pretty easily on the over. And 89% agreed with the over, 11% under. So
support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
Next one, I think, is an even easier one. Aaron Civale. This is one where it's just, I don't think Zips catches up to whatever he's doing. 4.75 ERA, 4.72 FIP, 140 innings, 25 games, 7.3 strikeout per nine, 2.5 walks per nine, 1.5 Fangraphs WAR. That's he's going to rocket over that like a million. Even if he didn't make these big changes and he basically looks exactly like Lucas Giolito, there's no way I think he goes under that.
If he hits 200 innings, he's going to get Cy Young votes. I honestly think that. He is the kind of pitcher that I love watching grow, and the Cleveland is so good at doing that with. He's the type of pitcher that has made my life writing about this team fun, basically, because it's just being able to see any kind of weird little potential in there, and then they just fully actualize all of it. And yeah, if he hits 200 innings, I think he's going to. He won't win the Cy Young, I don't think, but I think he'll get Cy Young votes. Like he will. He's going to be the number two. I think he will surpass Plesac this year as far as the number two. Why do I think that, you ask? Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Shut up.
I mean, he's made that change. I brought up Lucas Giolito. Like, they look exactly. It's not a guarantee he's going to have as much success as he did, but also like when you watch the way he throws now, they compare it to like throwing a football because it's like up by your ear more. Like when you watch that and then watch the old way he threw, like the old way looks painful almost because their arm is so extended. It makes so much more sense to throw it in this more compact way. And he's also going to have a splitter now, like Kenta Maeda has. I don't think that came up a whole lot in his start. I didn't see it very much. But
well, you know, I mean, it's with him.
We only
also
work on so many things at a time, but I'm not sure it's going to show up eventually.
I'm not going to sit here and lean on his splitter because he's still going to be a sinker, cutter, change, curve kind of guy.
Just throwing everything out there.
Just kind of just garbage bowling his way through there. So I can't remember what it was on Twitter, but we were comparing him to Josh Tomlin and stuff like that. It's like Josh Tomlin was not hitting low 90s with everything, basically. Like I know that Savali's not a threat to blow you away, but he's very much a threat to make you look like an absolute idiot. So
yeah, there's a lot of just lazy comparisons for Aaron Savali. Like even watching that game, because it was the Brewers broadcast who had it, they were very clearly just looking at the box score and just, they called him a garden variety right-hander who doesn't do anything well, but he just kind of is out there. And like, it's, shut up. It's,
he does literally everything well. He does like, right. I don't know. And maybe it's because it makes me feel superior. I mean, which is why I like players like this, because like, I recognize immediately that he doesn't do anything excellently, but he does everything very well. Like every single one of his pitches is, you know who he reminds me of? Is Carlos Carrasco in that way. Carlos Carrasco, once he became a starter, he didn't have the best of that pitch on the team, but I was always throwing my belief that he had the best overall repertoire in terms of I think he could go to any pitch and get someone out with, right? Because obviously like Kluber could just go to his slider, like a maniac, just go fastball slider a lot, or Bauer had like his curveball and stuff like that. And Bauer obviously made a leap towards the end of his time with the Tribe. But I was always firm in my belief that Carrasco was very much a jack of all trades kind of a guy. And I think that's very much what Savali is. I think Bieber is also that type of pitcher, which I think is really cool that they're kind of creating these guys. And I think Plesac is likewise kind of like that, because none of them throw a fastball more than 40% of the time, I don't think.
Yeah, no, it's a clear trend. I mean, this is all, it's linked back to Ruben Niebla, we've talked about before. He's like, as soon as they lose him, I am terrified for this team, because he's not going to be, they've either got to just keep promoting him and give him whatever he wants, or he's going to go somewhere and own the world, because at this point, I think he's behind, I mean, what, Bieber, Plesac, emergence, Savali doing what he's doing now.
I don't know, man. How many times have we been saying this, right? Like, it happens every single time.
I know, when is it not true, though? It's true every time.
Well, it's like every time they lose someone, like this was the brain man behind the brain trust. It's organizational at this point. Like, yeah, please act through a fastball 37% of the time this year. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe there was Niebla, and it's a big problem. But I don't think so. I think they'll be fine, because organizationally, you can't have someone like that and just be like, well, he must just be magic. We won't worry about it or try and duplicate it in some other way.
Yeah, I'm sure what he's doing. He's like spreading that through the organization too. Like whatever. Because I mean, the big thing is always now that they've linked development to scouting, so they're talking more than, so it is definitely organizational too, but I think Niebla is just one of the best ones at doing what he does where they are. So
I mean, again, we did say that about Mickey Callaway like 5 years
well
ago, so.
Did we ever actually say that about Mickey Callaway? I don't
yes remember. Dude, come on, okay.
It's pretty clear now he was not
100%. He was right. If anything, he was an impediment,
right? Yeah,
like, and that's the thing, like they lose guys and it's like, fuck, that's it, he was the man.
Yeah,
and then they bring people in. We think it's going to end. Like, listen, I
don't remember ever saying anything specific with Callaway though. We would always thought like, oh, he's such a good pitching coach because the pitchers are good. Like, it must be a connection there. Like,
maybe, you know, but there wasn't, and then,
there clearly was not. No.
And then I honestly was like worried that when they brought in like Carl Willis, I was like, oh man, he's all old school. And guess what? We had a guy with a pitching triple crown. And
I didn't think about it. Yeah, Carl Willis is there just doing his thing now, whatever the hell he does.
He's doing nothing. He's like clapping. Good work. Yeah, good pitch. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Like,
good stuff. I like it.
You know what? I'm a big Carl Willis guy now because he's just kind of sleeping in the background all the time.
He stays out of the way, which at this point, if you're the pitching coach for the Cleveland, that's what you got to do. They know what they're doing.
Ty Van Berkley, they learn from each other. Just stay out of the way. Now, one of them should probably get in the way of it more, but what are you going to do?
And yeah, as far as Savali, that's obviously 95% over, 5% under. Everybody pretty much agreed. Our next one, Cesar Hernandez, obviously one of Cleveland's, well, I guess, bigger acquisitions
big
of the offseason.
Splashes is what I refer to this one as,
Zips projects 647 plate appearances, 11 home runs, 8 stolen bases, 9.5 walks, 19.6 strikeout rate, 1.5 WAR, 89 WRC+. So not quite up to... I guess his little mini renaissance he had last year with Cleveland, but not a bad season, I guess, compared to what they could have at second base. But I don't know. This isn't a great projection. I would say over just because I think it's over. I think he's closer to the 110 he had last year. It seems kind of weird that Zips knocks him down so far. Considering
I know.
He's only had one year under average in the last four, and then Zips is like, oh, get down. You're done.
In the last five, even. I mean, last time he was a below average hitter was,
five,
2015. Yeah. He was still a 91 WRC plus. Like, he wasn't horrible by any stretch of the imagination. He's gotten better. So he had that weird outlier here in 2019. But it is bizarre how Zips is a conservative. It's not, I don't think it's quite as conservative as Baseball Prospectus, Pagoda. But it does always seem to run kind of low. Because Steamer has him at 90, even 95. I don't know what the hell the bat is. I don't know. But yeah, I feel like taking the over, not because I'm bold on him, but because this just seems unnaturally low. He takes so many pitches. He walks so much for his position, and he hits so many goddamn doubles. Like, I think it'll be, I don't know. Especially when it comes to wins by replacement, I think 1.5 is seriously underselling. He's never even close to that since he was a full time starter. So.
Yeah, he was almost two last year in the limited time that he was there. He was great on defense. Like,
he was incredible. Honestly, he was really good in 2020. I don't think he'll be that good, but I think he'll be an average hitter, quite honestly. And
you know, he's whatever. Always going to be good on defense, unless, I mean, aging is a thing. There's a curve that has to be put in somewhere, but I don't think it's quite as hard as Zips is taking.
And he's not going to be playing next to Francisco Lindor anymore, which sucks. But Jimenez and Rosario, I don't know if you saw, but Rosario. They went back and did some recharting about for defensive stats.
Run saves, yeah.
And he comes out a little bit better on that. So, again, it's not quite – the Lindor effect still, is gone.
He's still bad. Like, it's not like he became a great defender. He went from -9 to -3.
So. Listen, you jerk. You know, I'm trying to be nice. But it's
– whenever Jimenez is there, it's going to be good for Hernandez and everybody because he is clearly a very good glove at shortstop. Just depends on when he starts there.
But so he might take it on defense. Just trying to do more, especially depending on what happens with at first as well. Like, Carlos Santana was a good defensive first baseman. It makes life a little bit easier. I think in that case that's why we would prefer Bowers. But like you said, I'd take the over not because I'm excited, but because I don't think he'll be that bad. I don't think he'll be 89 WRC plus. Like, that's like Jason Kipnis Mark II.
Yeah. And I mean, after watching Kipnis on defense, as much as I loved him, that was not pretty. And then we get Hernandez, which is a big bump. 90% said over on that one, 10% under. That was a pretty other clear one. Our next one, last one for this week, Roberto Perez. Still one of my favorite players on the team. I don't care. He was bad, terrible offensively last year. 2019 is looking more and more, or no, what was that? 2019?
2019, yeah, when he was, 24 home runs, yeah.
When he was almost an average bat, that's looking like it might be maybe a tiny bit of an aberration. I don't know, but last year was weird. Zips has him at 362 plate appearances, 11 home runs, 9.7 walk rate, 30.9 strikeout rate, 65 WRC plus, 1.2 war. I take the over on this one just because I like him so much. I think he could very well hit this bad and be under, but also be worth more than what war puts him at, just because of his, if you're taking the word value at its true face of how valuable he is to the team, you can't really measure yet his framing, his defense, his overall just handling a pitching staff. I think all of that will just outperform whatever his war is. I think 1.2, maybe he hits with that poorly, like maybe he can't hit 24 home runs again and he strikes out 30% of the time. I mean, he is what, going on 32,
he'll
be 32 right now, this yeah. whole year. So I mean, he's not a young catcher. He doesn't have the wear and tear in his knees because he hasn't been a starter forever. But I think we'll see him in a decent amount of starts, maybe more than we'd expect a 32-year-old catcher. And he also slimmed down a lot, too. I mean, that's a thing that always comes up this time of year. But it's very clear, just looking at Roberto when you see him in spring training, he looks so much different behind the plate. Like, so I think that might help his knees and his aging curve a little bit, maybe. So I don't know. I think his defense is not going to waver at all. And he's going to hit, I would hope, better than 65 WRC+. Plus. So I think I take the over on this one.
I mean, I look at these numbers and think to myself, a major leaguer couldn't hit that poorly, could they? And then I look back to his, you know, give you an example, 2018 when he hit 168, or 2020 when he hit 165, or 2016 when he hit 183, or, you know, 207 in 2017.
He's got a history of not being a good hitter.
That's the thing. So. He's a bad hitter. Like, but it's just the numbers all seem so low. I can't in good conscience say. I guess this is one of those where I would just want to say push, or I don't want to say anything, because I feel like a major leaguer should get on base 30% of the time, but he has twice in his entire career. So, like you said, it is looking like 2019 may have been a bit of aberration. But again, last year was a weird one, and kind of got to toss the whole damn thing out because I don't know, though. Strikeouts are going up, and he certainly showed a propensity to not hit the ball at all in 2020 and every other year he's played baseball, basically. So I'll still take the over, but not with any happiness because these numbers are garbage.
And, they're not going to be good. But
no, I keep saying that I think the defense will still show up there and will it be worth more than 1.2 wins above replacement? I think on paper, maybe not. But I think in real life, maybe. Yeah. I feel uncomfortably comfortable about that. Sure.
I also like that. I mean, Zips is a coward. It did not project a stolen base for Roberto Perez.
Yeah, what the hell?
Steamer did. The bat did. A couple other things did. Because did you know that? Do you remember Roberto Perez's stolen base in 2018? That was a fun one. That was. So who was it against? I'm trying to look. Against the White Sox. He hit a ball. He hit it through the outfield. He didn't run the ball out very hard, which was the thing. Rick Manning during that game, he went on a several minute long rant against Roberto Perez because he didn't hustle when he hit the ball to the outfield. So he could have made it a second and he didn't. He was at first, but for no real reason, he stole second. I don't know if it was to make up for the lack of hustle, but he stole on a pitch. It wasn't like an egregious pitch where he had to steal or anything. He just kind of did. And it was amazing because he's Roberto Perez and he doesn't do that. So he does have one stolen base to his name. I think it'd be kind of cool if he finishes with just the one. And it's such a unique one because it came when he clearly didn't hustle running out of ball. As for as slow as he is, I think he hustles quite a bit. You remember he had that period where he didn't hit forever, but he still tried to get to second base when he did get a hit. So
yeah, it's like at that Perez game, it was incredible. Yeah, it was in Baltimore. It was wonderful. Just a wonderful moment. Yeah.
So it's not like he doesn't hustle all the time. It's just this one time he didn't, and then he also steals a base to make up for it. I don't know. Roberto Perez always has a special place in my heart because
Pecota also projected him to have a stolen base.
See, he's going to do it. Is this the year he gets a second stolen base?
And a triple. Interesting. What the hell?
He has four of those, so maybe that could happen. Well,
all right. I guess the ball could wander around somewhere and just fall into someone's pocket by accident or something.
Yeah, I would think that's probably more likely than falling into a stolen base, right? Because you'd have to a triple can happen just because of that. If somebody doesn't get to a ball in time, it's not.
You could get a stolen base on a triple against a reliever who is maybe mopping up with a backup catcher. There's like a series of events that could come together that make more sense to me than him getting a triple. And they're all just like it has to be a perfect confluence of all these kind of disparate little bits of time to. But yeah, yeah,
Gary Sanchez behind the plate. And then it doesn't matter. Exactly.
Gary Sanchez behind the plate, some reliever who just doesn't, you know, to hold. Honestly, you know, who'd be a good person for him to steal a base on would be Aroldis Chapman. He's very bad at holding people on. So that would be a funny one, actually. A guy who just throwing 105.
And then Roberto takes off on him. That'd be good.
Pecota calls it a useful bonus if he hits 20 dingers. And honestly, I think that's how we all look at him. Like, Cleveland kind of comes to the plate with a handicap, just come playing with only, you know, eight hitters effectively. So,
yeah, I mean, that's always the way I saw Roberto, too. Because you remember, like, back in, what was it, like 2015, 2016, he walked a lot. Like, his thing for the longest time was he could walk and he might run into a home run once in a while.
Yeah.
And then 2019 happened where he walked a lot less, but he hit a bunch of home runs. You're like, what the hell? He can hit now. And last year he couldn't. So I'll be interested to see another full season of him actually getting the hit. I don't know if last year was just again, it feels like it didn't happen and it feels like we can throw it out so easily because everything is so weird. And
it's funny, his whiff rate has actually dropped a little bit each of the last 3 years, so maybe he's actually kind of a late career renaissance as a great hitter.
So silver slugger is what you're saying. Is
what I'm saying to you here, Matthew, is a silver slugger, because right now who's the best hitting catcher in the American League? I don't even know, quite honestly. Gary Sanchez? I don't know. Yeah, the Yankees hate him, so.
Why can't I think of the White Sox catcher who I wanted the Indians to get at one point?
Oh, Yasmani Grandal.
Yeah, there you go. That's probably him.
Yeah, it's probably him. Or the dude on the Twins also.
I mean, he's kind of good, yeah. That's right. Mitch Garver, yeah. He might hit all right. I don't know.
I was going to say the other one, the short little wide man.
Why can't I think of names right now?
I know you're talking about. Damn.
The guy never misses. He swings at everything, but doesn't miss.
We're good speaksters. I'm pulling up his information.
Yeah. But anyway, 86% agreed with Roberto Perez. They said over 14 under. So I think that's one. I think everybody just loves Roberto at this point. Even if you don't think he's going to hit, they'd want him to be over that, which is fair. So yeah, we'll finish up those next week. We'll have just a couple more left. If you want to join the conversation on it, letsgotribe.com. There's still a couple that we'll talk about this week. And then we'll mention them on the podcast next. But Last thing we'll do this week is
Williams Astudillo.
There you go. That's the one. He's really fun. What is his name? The Turtle, I think. La Tortuga, is that him?
That is Turtle.
Yeah, that's his nickname, which I think is great. But yeah, we asked everybody on Twitter what their... So this poll question, I think it's interesting because it's on the surface, it's just talking about which player is going to be traded. That's the question. Who is most likely to be dealt by the 2021 deadline? Ahmed Rosario, Eddie Rosario, Tristan McKenzie, Nick Whitgreen. But it's like four choices, but it's also, there's more unto it depending on, more under it depending on what you pick. Like if you pick Ahmed Rosario, I think you're thinking that Andre Jimenez comes up, he's fine, he sticks, and then Rosario is just trade bait at the end because he still has some control. Eddie Rosario, if you pick him, I think it's pretty clear that you believe the roster is done, this team is cooked. Like if Cleveland's competing and they don't need to, like unless Nolan Jones is just amazing and Daniel Johnson is great in right field, then there's almost no reason they trade Eddie Rosario if they're still competing. So I mean, picking him means you think the team is terrible and they're selling. Tristan McKenzie, it could go either way. Like if you think they're starting to sell and they can just get rid of this guy with a bunch of control. Also, I think you could make the case that trading Tristan McKenzie means they're trading him for like an immediate impact bat. Like it's another trade they've had, which we wanted Mike Clevinger to be. We didn't think it was with Josh Naylor. Maybe it'll turn out to be where they get a big bat right away if they're competing. So that one can go either way. Nick Whitgren, I think that could go either way as well. Like if you just think they're selling and he's like one of their third or fourth best reliever, they just get rid of him. Again, maybe they're competing and they trade him for like package him with McKenzie or somebody else who needs a lot of pitching help and you get a better bat. So this is just kind of a big Rorschach test where I think you can, whatever you make of it, when you look at it, you can determine. It's a Rorschach test. Did I pronounce that right?
You sure did. You're a winner, bud.
That's awesome. Good. I'm glad we reviewed that before the podcast. I had my big moment and you ruined it because I was looking right at the pronunciation guide as I was doing it.
I am a jerk. Do.
Yeah, who did you vote for this one, Merritt?
I didn't vote. I forgot to. I was working. And then I worked out and then the poll ended. So I did not.
If you cared about our podcast, Merritt, who would you have voted for?
I would abstain, Matt, because I would want to maintain journalistic integrity.
I voted for Ahmed Rosario.
Honestly, I think it's something that makes sense. Tristan McKenzie, come on. He's under massive amounts of control. Nick Whitgren, why would you trade him? That one's more of a how would you trade him? Because, like, who's going to take, I don't know. What are you going to trade him for? I guess would be the real question. Maybe in a package or something. But Ahmed Rosario makes a sense, as several made it in the comments made a point. Right, like you said, it's a position of strength. Obviously, they have Yu Chang, so they don't need any other middle infielders. But really, they have Jimenez, and also they have Yu Chang, and also they have even for next year, right? You know what I mean? Like, they can figure out the Hernandez situation at second later by putting Yu Chang there. I'm big on Yu Chang. I don't know if you can tell. Matt wanted to include Yu Chang on this poll, and I nixed it because
yeah, like how you stood on the Nick Whitgren option. Was that with your replacement for Yu Chang? They're really going to add more options to this poll, I'm telling you, because I think Yu Chang's an interesting one too, because it's I would have said, like, it's the same thing I guess as McKenzie. If they trade him, if everything's working, I don't think you sell him if you're terrible, because at that point you sell somebody else and just plug in Yu Chang to fill them in. But if you think he's good, if the Indians are good, they could trade Yu Chang for somebody else with a package. But
I know I just poo-pooed it, but I like the idea of trading Tristan McKenzie, because it just means, like, what that tells me then is that Aaron Civale is a fucking freight train, and they have a top three of just aces, and then their bullpen is stacked because Nick Whitgren is pitching out of his mind, and the other three guys are also gods, and Hentges has turned into a superstar.
Logan,
I would have clicked on Ahmed Rosario. Yes, that would have been my choice, because Eddie Rosario is going nowhere. Because like if he's hitting well, you're going to hold on to him because he's gone next year. If he's not, I guess if they're bad, then you would trade him.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, because he's a rental, so
yeah.
If he's bad, then you just get rid of him now.
Yeah, I hate the 25.7% of people who voted for
him. I'd imagine that's what all that was. That was, I hate this team. They're going to be bad. I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, rude-ass jerks. Oh, it's only a quarter of people. You can't trust a quarter. At any given time, you can't trust a quarter of all people. So.
Yeah, and as far as trading McKenzie, like, if their rubric for trading pitchers is you think they're going to be injured, there's nobody else you trade before Tristan McKenzie at this point, because unless they see something in somebody else's delivery, like, he's the one you can project to be injured the next just because of how he's built and his past. Like, but I also don't want him to, because I think Tristan McKenzie's going to rule, and I want him to be in Cleveland for a long time. Lamole at Franmil raised his eyebrow. He said, you trade from areas of strength. Ahmed would be moved and possibly packaged with somebody else for a player to fix a weakness. Our rotation and pen isn't as deep as it used to be. So I can see them moving, and this team without Eddie would be inept. I hope they re-sign him.
I mean, Plutko is still their sixth starter. I don't know what we're talking about when they don't have a, deep bullpen or rotation, rather.
Yeah, it's more unproven than in the past, I would say. We know it's deep just by looking at it and projecting into the future, but it's not like you have a guaranteed Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, Clevinger kind of thing like they did for a while there. So I get the thinking that it's deep. I think the bullpen not being as deep is not like Royals Review, the Kansas City Royals site for SB Nation, they did a great preview of Cleveland, and they also said the bullpen's deep. I don't get, am I just overrating the top four of the bullpen, or does Cleveland actually have a really good bullpen that I'm not? Do they not have as good as a bullpen as I think? No, yeah, everybody says they're not deep, but I don't get that.
I think it's because people don't know these names, right? People know Karinchak now because he's a psychopath. Yeah. They know Classic because he was suspended. They look at Phil Maton's numbers and don't realize that he's actually good. And then Whitgren being your fourth best, they don't have a bunch of guys who they don't. You know what it is? People assume either you have the Rays / the Dodgers. Or else you have nothing. Like, that is a deep bullpen. It's when you have seven guys who are potential, like, closer ace-ass guys. And I don't think Cleveland has that. I think they have four guys that can potentially be that, but and with more on the way. But it's just, I think the standards are higher than people's personal standards are different than what is actually true. So.
Yeah, because I would actually say this is like the deepest bullpen they've had in a long time. It's not Shaw, Allen, Miller at the top, unless Karinchak and Class A actually end up being better. But I mean, you have all these, and you also got the starters that don't make it, like Scott Moss, Logan Allen. If Cal Quantrill isn't the starter, Adam Plutko maybe can be a decent reliever. Sam Hedges. So they're gonna have a bunch of arms back there, which I think a lot of people are underrating.
Which again, unproven arms, but that's fine. I mean, that you. A year ago, you could have told me that the Rays have a great bullpen. I would have named them. I don't know who any of these people are. Like, I'm sure I did, but I just, they're not. It's not like it's a bunch of former closers that they signed to just fill out their bullpen like the Yankees or the Dodgers did. It's a bunch of guys who are talented who you haven't heard of yet because they plucked them off the street because they're cheap and they let them go and they get expensive. So yeah, I think you're right in saying they have a better bullpen than people are giving them credit for.
All right, Merritt. That'll do it for us this week. If you're not already subscribed on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts, go ahead and subscribe. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Follow us. I'm at MattRLY on Twitter. Merritt is at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. Of course, find Let's Go Tribe at Let's Go Tribe and on Facebook. And of course, letsgotribe.com. The Discord, if you go to Let's Go Tribe on Twitter, it's in our profile. You can click it there. We have a trivia bot now we're working on. It's going to be ridiculous, and we'll have stuff to do there. When the regular season starts, we'll have game threads you can talk about in there, and in addition to the ones on the actual website. So that's a lot of fun. Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll see you.